So my first question, which will get edited, no doubt. How did you go from mainstream Washington, D.C. journalism to writing a newsletter about education and kids?
And Forbes, too. I spent 10 years at Forbes.
Between the
between the Washington Post and EdSearch.
Oh, my goodness.
I spent a decade at Forbes.
In that case, the question is, how did you go from mainstream... So how did you go from mainstream journalism to writing a newsletter about education?
Sure. So you're right. I was a mainstream journalist all my life. I started with Scientific American magazine and the Washington Post, and then spent 10 years with Forbes. And I reached a point when I was at Forbes when I could see that the difference between the technology that I knew was in the real world, in the adult world, and the technology that I saw in the schools was really different, right? I had two kids. They were in the public schools in a pretty decent public school in California, the edge of Silicon Valley. And yet the education they were getting, the experiences they were having were almost identical to what I'd had 30 years ago. I didn't say that number. A long time ago in Connecticut. And I was puzzled by that. And I was really intrigued by the opportunity to play a role in education. And so I did a insanely stupid thing, which is in the middle of what I hope is the biggest recession of our lifetime. I quit my job at Forbes. I was bureau chief and executive editor for our technology coverage. And I spent a year volunteering as an IT person in the schools and dusted out the dust bunnies and plugged in the computers and realized that many times the reasons that teachers chose not to use technology were really rational, that the environment in which they were working was so challenging. And so I spent a year doing that, and then I started to see something which I had seen many, many times in my career as a journalist, which is I started to see a few entrepreneurs starting companies, in this case around education technology. I started to see a few financiers dabbling, putting a little bit of money, sprinkling a little bit of money here and there. And I knew that when an industry was starting to get rolling, it needed someone. When an industry was starting to get rolling, it needed someone to write about it. And that was something I did know how to do. And so we started the newsletter. But there was a second idea, because I have three co-founders, a teacher, a techie, and a designer. And the second thing that we all felt really strongly about was that there was nothing like a consumer reports in education technology. So here you had schools spending millions of dollars to buy stuff, and it was based on the say-so of the vendors or maybe on some other educator they knew someplace, but that was it. And that didn't seem right. And so we really started with a dual mission. One was to support the EdTech emerging ecology ecosystem. But the second was to try to bring a little bit more of a voice, to try to bring a little more common sense, to bring a little bit of a level-headed opinion to this emerging world so that people could start to ask the question, well, what tool makes sense in what context?
Why is it that do you think that education in this country, which has such a wealth of resources, is so poor?
That is such a wonderful question. I don't know. I don't know. I've wondered a lot about that. Why is it that when parents say the most important thing in their life is their kid, when we know that one of the most important fundamental things in our own lives is our education. So why don't we double down on that? Why aren't we spending 3 to 4 times as much money on these things? I wish I could answer that question.
Technology for kids has absolutely blossomed in the last few years. Do you think it's better now? Does it continue to improve? Or is it the same old, same old?
So there is a ton of technology out there for kids. And one of the things that research is certainly showing is sometimes it can be an incredible distraction for kids. We've seen studies that say that if kids are bringing devices into school and there's not a reason for them to have those devices in school, they'll just play with them all day. And that's not going to help anyone. That's not going to help learning. That's not going to help attention. So there's a danger involved in that as well. On the other hand, we also see times when technology is connecting kids, connecting schools and parents, helping create bridges that didn't exist before. When the technology helps bridge things, it can be incredibly powerful. If it's simply distracting and entertaining us, it can be very potently dangerous too. So I think that's a really big question to answer. It's a little bit of both. And it's up to us to figure out what's the context to introduce it so that it's more of a force for good rather than a force for distraction.
I've always felt that people in technology, especially executives or executives in marketing, should focus more on education, that there should be a part of the person who's, he may be the marketing officer for a van rental company, but that there should be more of an emphasis on education from the top down, from the CEO levels down, because eventually we're going to get to a situation where we don't have, and in many industries, we are at that situation when we don't have the people that we need to either come in and be the finance person or come in and be whatever it needs to be. I mean, we can have van drivers up the wazoo, but we need people to also run companies and create ideas and do things. And you can't do that pretty much if you can't read and write.
I think that, our hope is that every child has a chance to be the cool person that they would like to be. There shouldn't be a reason why, because of where you've been born or the family that you've been born into, that you shouldn't have the same opportunities as kids in nice neighborhoods with mommies and daddies who show up every night for dinner. So how do we make sure, how do we try to help the kids who do not have the same sort of opportunities to be able to build a path, to get to a great school, to be able to explore the talents they have, to be able to feel really reinforced, to have their curiosity reinforced. That should be everybody's job, right? That should be the job, not just of CEOs and marketing people. That should be the job of every parent, every neighbor, every person in the planet. To try to give kids their shot at becoming the amazing person that they can be. So yeah, I would agree with you. It should be everybody's job to try to make those things possible. And if we can use technology to give some kids a springboard into a world that otherwise they might not have had a chance to get into, then good things could happen.
Tell me about your newsletter. Who's it aimed at and what's it about?
Well, first I'll tell you there are two newsletters. We write a newsletter on Wednesdays that we call EdSurge Innovate, and we write a newsletter on Thursdays that we call EdSurge Instruct. And my dear colleague Mary Jo Matta edits the Thursday newsletter, and my dear friend Tony Wan edits the Wednesday newsletter. We think that Wednesday is a little bit aimed at entrepreneurs. We think that Thursday is aimed a little bit at educators. But at the end of the day, part of what we're trying to write about is, again, we're trying to write about the ecosystem for how do you kind of build a company? How do you build an ed tech company? How do you live in this world? And then once some people have built those things, what do you do with this stuff? And so we do have those two different readers in mind. We also think that lots of other people read the newsletters. We have parents who read the newsletters because sometimes they're interested in the products. We have financiers who read the newsletters because they're interested in what those entrepreneurs are up to. And we certainly have a lot of government and policy and philanthropists and all sorts of ed-you-wanna-be people involved who are just trying to figure out what the heck is going on. So we try to have some fun with both of the newsletters. We have enjoyed April Fool's Day. We do special April Fool's issues or supplements or excerpts or whatever, depending on what day of the week it falls on. And we try to bring a little bit of a irreverent sense of humor, regardless of whether the readers are educators or entrepreneurs.
Are you seeing a rising interest in education from people who, say, for example, you'd never thought would be even vaguely interested? I mean, I keep looking at, for example, the ASU-GSV Summit. It's getting bigger every year. And it's getting more powerful every year. It's attracting interesting people who've got an opinion, people who you would perhaps never naturally think of as being somebody who would speak at an education conference, like Sir Richard Branson. Education seems to be evolving and bringing people in.
So I think the interesting question is, well, what do we mean when we say education? We mean, how do we think about the world? How are we learning? And I think we're all discovering that learning isn't something that we just do between the ages of 6 and 21 or between the hours of 8 and 3. As a journalist, one of the great things that we do is we get to learn all the time. We learn in the morning, night, noon, pretty much so any moment of the day or night. We're learning all of our lives. Maybe we're all becoming kind of like that. Maybe that's really what education of the future is. And so, yeah, I think that we're starting to see a lot of interest, not in just what happens in the classroom, but how do we get this idea of learning really, really seeped into our souls at every moment of the day and night? We know that the world is a different place. The world is a much different place than it was when you started your career, when I started my career. I mean, I remember actually taking my first test with the Associated Press using a typewriter. Scary thought. Some of my colleagues probably have never even seen a typewriter. The world is changing. Whether you believe that the pace is that much faster, it certainly is a pretty quick pace. We know we all have to keep learning. And so how are we going to do that? And how are we going to do that in a way where we're really driving that learning, where we're excited about that learning? No one's going to be sitting over us with a ruler and saying, you've got to learn this now. We've got to be motivated internally. We've got to be excited about it and look for kind of amazing adventures of the mind. And if that's what learning is, then yeah, guess what? I think that the opportunities to pull a whole lot more people into this adventure of learning are pretty huge.
I think that pretty much covers anything and everything, except for asking you whether there's anything else that you've liked to, that we didn't think to ask.
Anything you want to talk about?
That you wanted to say.
Yeah, I think there is one more thing. EdSurge has this mission of trying to help people find the right technology for the right environment. Not every piece of technology will make a difference in every school, for every kid, any classroom. Fundamental to that, we believe, is really amplifying the voice of teachers. You know, teachers have gotten a little bit of a bad rap recently. We talk about standardized tests, we talk about, you know, performance, et cetera, et cetera. We forget that most people who go into teaching go in for the joy of learning and for the joy of inspiring kids. And we believe at EdSurge that the most successful technology tools are going to be the ones that teachers really embrace, because for them, they see it as a magic wand that amplifies their ability to inspire kids. So the other thing that we talk a lot about here is, how do we make sure that teacher voice comes through? How do we make sure that they are as excited about the future of learning as we are?